Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, Sayer G. Sayer G is a widely recognized researcher, author, and lecturer, and an advisory board member for the National Health Federation. In 2008, he founded GreenMedInfo, which is the world's most widely referenced evidence-based natural health resource of its kind. GreenMedInfo offers more than 20,000 indexed study abstracts from the National Library of Medicine. It provides the world with an open-access, evidence-based resource supporting natural and integrative modalities. GreenMedInfo also features daily health articles that are written by a wide range of professionals, from MDs to homeopaths. Sayer is co-author of the book The Cancer Killers and a leading expert on the power of real food and natural principles to be unleashed for radical improvements in health and in wellness. So now, Sayer, we are honored and we're grateful for this time with you. And for the interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad, John Robbins.
Thank you, Ocean, and thank you, Sayer, for being here with us.
Thank you, Ocean and John. It's a great honor to be part of this.
The science of nutrition is uncovering a really radical new way of looking at food. According to this new perspective, food is not just calories and not just fuel, it's information. It actually contains instructions that communicate messages to our genes, to our hormones, to our immune system, to our gut flora, in fact, to every system in the human body. This new perspective essentially changes everything we know about food because it suggests that health results from the quality of the information we put in our bodies. According to this perspective, food carries more than nutrients, it carries intelligence. Sayer, I'd like to ask you to talk with us a little about this new understanding.
Thank you, John. I couldn't have said it better myself. It is absolutely fascinating now that we understand that the body, and of course what the body requires in order to live, is not just based on building blocks, amino acids, proteins, lipids, or micronutrients and vitamins, but information, then we start to look at food and our bodies very differently. And what that means essentially is that, say we're looking at a GMO food versus an organic one, well, present definitions say they're equivalent substantially because the proteins, the amounts of the standard nutrients are the same if you look at it just quantitatively. But when you look at the actual molecular bonds in the food and you evaluate the quality of information, what you find is there's a dramatic difference because on the one hand, an organic food may have literally millions of years of evolution behind it, packing that food full of information that actually helps to regulate the genes of those who consume it, versus a novel new food that's shot through with the genes of other species or perhaps are coated with new genes that make it resistant to an herbicide like Roundup. So the new view of food as information is really radicalizing the idea that we can't just kind of hand wave the differences between GMOs and organic away, but that it's as critical as life and death when it comes to our health destiny.
I hear you saying that foods that have been genetically engineered, and I know this goes as well for highly processed foods, may not manifest the same crucial ability to regulate systems in our bodies as do the foods with which we have co-evolved. That possibility makes it all the more infuriating to me that we don't have labeling of GMOs.
Yeah, absolutely, because in order for us to be able to have informed consent, we need to know what's in our food, and to take that away from the consumer is truly equivalent to enrolling everyone into a medical experiment. And of course, you and I didn't choose to be part of this, you know, sort of massive experiment, but that's unfortunately what's happening.
I want to switch gears here and highlight some of the astounding studies you feature on GreenMedInfo. I love how you find research that validates the healing powers of everyday foods, like pomegranates, for example. Millions of people today take drugs to lower their blood pressure and/or their cholesterol levels. These drugs have significant side effects. And at best, they just treat symptoms. They don't do much to address the underlying conditions that produce the problem in the first place. Yet you've uncovered research that pomegranate juice can actually reverse the underlying pathologies of the cardiovascular system that too often lead to bypass surgeries and heart attacks. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, what an amazing study out of Israel. And, you know, what they found was that when they gave the treatment group just a simple glass of pomegranate juice, they were enrolled for up to 3 years, is that they found that the arterial plaque within the carotid artery started to regress significantly, such that within a matter of a few months, they started to see a significant reduction. In fact, about 30% was observed within 1 year on average within the treatment group. And so that's remarkable when you think that as of today, the number one killer, of course, is cardiovascular disease-related heart attacks. And as of right now, they use a surrogate marker, cholesterol, as a way of fighting the disease. So they suppress it with statin drugs and other cholesterol-lowering medications, even though, of course, those drugs are actually neurotoxic and myotoxic or muscle damaging, the muscle being a highly nerve-saturated organ, the heart, right? It's probably the worst approach you could take to reducing cardiovascular disease risk, whereas this pomegranate looks like blood, has this astringent quality. And when you think about it, okay, the lining of the blood vessels and the arteries is these epithelial cells, okay? And so just like in your tissues of your mouth or gums, when you take pomegranate, has an astringent quality. You can feel it just clean that ickiness, some of the mucus, and tightens up the tissue, and you don't have the bad taste in your mouth. Well, that's exactly what it does within the blood vessels, to the point where it's actually been shown to kill antibiotic-resistant bacteria, such as methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus or MRSA, as well as fighting a number of viruses. Cardiovascular plaque actually has a lot of infections or co-infections involved. And that's also why it's sort of this autoimmune snowball. The white blood cells come in and try to attack the damaged tissue, which is also infected. And it just snowballs out of control over the years. So pomegranate is sort of a 1-2 punch. It's able to really reverse the underlying damage to the blood vessels, which is often described as endothelial dysfunction, and then reverse some of the plaque and then clear some of the infection. And it's delicious. So what a perfect alternative to the drugs.
Yes, it is. And we eat a diet, most of us, that unfortunately generates those plaques and damages the epithelial cells. I'm thinking now of a recent article that you wrote. I found it quite fascinating. It was titled, "Why Turmeric May Be the Vegetarian's Best Friend." Have we co-evolved with turmeric? What is it about turmeric that's so extraordinary?
You're referring to a study that was recently published that was truly eye-opening on turmeric, basically explaining why the plant-based diet has been so successful in regions like India, where they're not consuming a fat that is known to be extremely rare, which is docosahexaenoic acid, or DHA, and which is essential for brain function, for example. And so what happens is there's alpha-linolenic acid, the precursor, in plant-derived omega-3s, right? So flaxseed, walnut, chia has plenty of that. Well, certain people genetically don't have an enzyme or don't have the activity of this enzyme to convert it into DHA. And so the thought for quite some time was, well, we can't be dependent on a plant-based diet because some of us just don't have the enzyme. Turns out turmeric has been shown to upregulate the activity of that enzyme in the liver and the brain, basically helping the body take plant derived omega-3s and turning them into that precious, quote, animal-specific fat that, you know, a lot of those in the paleo movement, ancestral diet movement have claimed you can only get from animal sources. So I love this idea, John and Ocean, about how our bodies have been able to use plant allies like turmeric in cultures that prized and had compassion for animals. For example, the cows they would take milk from, but they would treat them as if they were sacred. They wouldn't think of consuming the meat. And they had a whole spiritual tradition based on not wanting to kill sentient beings. Well, they got around it by optimizing their gene and epigenetic system by taking some of the beautiful benefits of their plant allies and then helping to improve their evolution through their nutritional choices.
You're talking about DHA, which is, of course, along with EPA, the two long-chain omega-3 fatty acids that are so important to brain health, so important to our emotional well-being, so very, very important to the developing fetus's well-being, and generally are found in certain kinds of fatty fish at high levels. Some people take fish oil supplements as a result in order to get the DHA and the EPA, the long-chain omega-3s. We find precursors to them, as you mentioned, in flaxseed oil and chia seeds and walnuts, and soy actually has some too. But they need to be converted to DHA and EPA, and people vary on how much they can convert. And so many people shy away from a plant-strong diet, thinking, well, I need to eat fish to get these long-chain omega-3s. Actually, fish don't produce them. Fish get them from phytoplankton that they eat. So they originally arise out of plants in the sea. And if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that this study suggests that turmeric may actually enhance the conversion of the omega-3s found in plant foods, such as flax and chia seeds and walnuts, to the long-chain omega-3s DHA and EPA.
Exactly. And it did that by increasing the biosynthetic pathway in the liver and the brain. So what an amazing enhancement of our genetic abilities to be able to live optimally on a plant-based diet.
Turmeric really is an amazing substance, a root, and particularly its constituent curcumin, which is what gives the spice its golden hue. These are some of the most extensively studied natural compounds of all time. There are, I think, 5,000 or so references to them in the National Library of Medicine's database, known as Medline. And yet, despite having been shown to help with over 600 diseases, including cystic fibrosis and cancer, turmeric still has not been the subject of extensive human clinical research. Why is that?
That's a great question. It's a really clear answer, which is because it is something that's not patentable. It doesn't have the incentive as far as attracting the $1 billion on average it takes to fund the FDA's drug approval process, which requires phase 1, 2, 3 trials, often a decade plus of money, time put in on the front end. And of course, unless it's patentable, you can't get market exclusivity and therefore can't get a return on investment. So, you know, because corporations or those with the capital have a fiduciary responsibility to generate some type of profit, you know, it makes sense why you wouldn't see any money really flow into a human study or trial on its benefits. But despite that, there's still a good bulk of research that was done on a preliminary basis that had some astounding results nonetheless.
Well, this points to the whole paradox or dilemma of natural medicine, that natural substances, because they are natural, can't be patented, and therefore they don't draw the investment capital, and therefore they don't have the credibility in the minds of Western medicine, which looks to these types of human clinical research trials as the gold standard. It's as though we have an economic bias in the system against natural remedies.
Yes. Yeah, in fact, the FDA definition of a drug is anything that prevents, cures, diagnoses, or treats a disease. And so, therefore, of course, I take cherry some nights, you know, as an alternative to an NSAID painkiller because I know it's going to help me with my pain. But if I were at a health food store, for example, and I was telling a customer that this could help them cherry juice for their pain, that could be classified as a Class D felony in the state of Florida. It's literally practicing medicine without a license and promoting an unapproved drug. And as it stands, that's the health freedom situation we face in this country, is that you don't even really have a legal choice to use a natural compound to treat yourself because of the way they've defined treatment and drugs.
That's why the kind of health education that you provide is so very important, I think. You've written about, among other things, the remarkable power of blueberries to reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease and possibly even reduce the risk of cancer. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's interesting because blueberries seem so benign, you know. Wow, how could they do something like treat triple negative breast cancer? But of all the things I've ever seen in the research that are able to induce programmed cell death in the worst prognosis cancer cell type, triple negative, meaning it doesn't have the three dominant receptors that you can use to treat it, blueberry has been found to have that ability. You know, when you look at the research on blueberry on greenmedinfo.com, we have 70 studies indexed. I'm sorry, actually, it's 47 studies, but 70 diseases that blueberry has been shown to have potential benefit for. And, of course, when you think about it in terms of the magic bullet approach, oh, gosh, this is like a natural alternative to a drug. It could suppress a symptom or it could, you know, be good for this disease or that. You start to realize instead of looking at, for example, cancer as just something that happens, certainly it's not a lack of chemotherapy or radiation. I could make the statement that cancer is caused by a lack of blueberries in the diet or a lack of the polyphenols that are naturally occurring in foods like blueberry. And when we start acknowledging that, then we realize that truly the future of medicine is trying to get us back on, you know, really largely what you're promoting, a plant-based diet, high quality, that is going to provide not only the building blocks, but really the information that is present within only these foods, and without which, of course, our whole genetic and epigenetic blueprint falls apart.
Would other berries, as well as blueberries, things like raspberries and strawberries, also show these same benefits?
Absolutely. That is what's so interesting about the research, is that over the years I've gathered research on every berry you can think of and even created a meta category called Berries All. And we have now indexed 187 diseases that have been studied for berries either preventing, mitigating, or treating. And so, again, it's amazing when you think of the pharmaceutical industry's their dream has been a poly pill now for many years. If you take one pill, it's good for blood pressure, cholesterol, you have a blood thinning, and they've never been able to create it. Whereas if you look at a simple berry and the number of side benefits, we start realizing, wow, is this why there's absolutely no real promotion and freedom when it comes to looking at natural medicine today and food-based medicine? It's because it competes with a multi-trillion dollar medical model, you know, that doesn't really provide a solution.
When you mentioned the search for the poly pill, one pill that would guarantee health or provide something very special, I thought of vitamin pills and multivitamins, and I thought particularly of the best-selling children's vitamin brand in the country, Flintstones Vitamins, which proudly proclaim on their package to be pediatricians' number one choice. So I looked into it, and I found that this wildly successful brand features a list of ingredients that includes aspartame and coal tar artificial coloring agents, including FDNC blue number 2 and red number 40 and yellow number 6, and really a slew of rather shocking ingredients. What's the story here?
Oh, it's such an amazing story. It's disturbing, but you know, most don't realize this. A lot of the vitamins on the market that are popular, like Centrum and Flintstones Vitamins marketed for kids, are produced by the world's most powerful drug company. So Bayer Corporation actually produced Flintstones, and then Wyeth produces Centrum. And what happens is they take chemicals that are technically extremely toxic, and if you just release them into the environment, you'd have to pay a lot of money for fines or you'd have to clean it up. So cupric oxide is one example in Flintstones. It's a chemical that's actually so toxic it could be considered, you know, really a poison or a biocide. Or they use the coal tar colorings, which, you know, if you look at the European Union, that's 500 million people represented there. They banned the use of these coloring agents because they were known to cause attention deficit disorder-like symptoms, and the neurotoxicity is well characterized. They don't even need to put them in these vitamins. They just make them look red and pretty, like berries, right? They're kind of taking advantage of that evolutionary hardwiring in our brain. Then, of course, hydrogenated oil, which hydrogenation is something that is so dark ages. Like, we know now it's causing cardiotoxicity. Even aggression has been linked to the consumption of hydrogenated oil. Aspartame is just a neurotoxin. And so, you know, you have children. I have two, you know, young girls, and you just think, gosh, they're putting these things in our children's vitamins, saying that they're essential for their health. And really, it's atrocious. What these kids need is high-quality berries, high-quality foods that are within the scope of plant-based nutrition, high-quality fats like avocado, coconut. This is really what our children are dying from a lack of today.
There are a lot of different ways to look at supplements, and I tend to think that dietary supplements, including vitamins and whole foods derived when possible, can, if used wisely, help to compensate for some of the damage our bodies incur through living in modern society. But of course, it is never wise to use supplements to justify a poor diet or otherwise unhealthy lifestyles. And I don't think any amount of supplements will ever be able to substitute for healthy food choices. And that's why I don't like to see something I see a lot of, which is vitamins added to otherwise nutritionally impoverished foods, creating a nutritional facade. And then people get tricked into buying these foods, thinking they're doing something good for themselves.
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, many don't realize that the type of vitamins added in as sort of additives like folic acid doesn't occur in nature. Folate is actually from foliage. You know, it's a vitamin that you can't really reproduce the way that they're doing presently. And then things like DL-alpha versus D-alpha tocopherol, that's a petroleum-derived form of vitamin E, which has all these ghost molecules that are theoretically disrupting the vitamin E signaling in the body. But because we look at only structure chemistry today when we look at vitamins, not realizing that vitamin activity really isn't reducible to the skeleton or the chemical background of, say, one molecule in a food. It's the context. The food is the context of the delivery system. And the moment you take a nutrient out of a food, a whole food, it actually becomes more like a chemical.
Well, people are told often, get your nutrients, get your vitamins from foods, not from pills. And that's good advice. But the food industry actually tries to exploit that. There's a product, for example, vitamin water. That sounds great. People drink it. They think they're getting their vitamins from this drink. They think they're getting it from food. They think that's what's really been advised. But it's not. And in fact, vitamin water is owned by Coca-Cola. Most people don't know that. And the product is essentially sugar water with some added flavorings and a few pennies worth of synthetic vitamins. There's so many examples like that. Red Bull, very popular product. On the front label, you're told in big letters that Red Bull is an energy drink with taurine that vitalizes body and mind, which sounds great. If you're tired, if you're brain fogged, this sounds like this is your ticket. But if you look on the back, you find in very small letters that the first two ingredients in Red Bull are sucrose and glucose. It's sugar water. People are being hoodwinked into buying processed junk food, thinking it's healthy.
Yeah, you know, one thing that folks don't fully realize is because the microbial populations in, on, around our body actually constitute 99% of the cells that make us up as a meta-organism, so we are actually more microbial than anything else, is that a lot of those bacteria in our gut actually synthesize vitamins for us, assuming they're present because we're eating a natural diet grown in natural organic soil. So, for example, there's a type of folic acid, or really we should call it folate because folic acid is sort of synthetic, it's called 5-methylene tetrahydrofolate. And a lot of people have mutations, okay, the MTHFR mutation, which they can't basically produce this metabolite. The bacteria in our gut, though, can if we have those strains. And the whole group B class of vitamins is synthesized in the gut, along with innumerable other molecules we need. So when we think about liberating ourselves from the medical system or even a lot of oversupplementation with synthetic vitamins, it really does get back to the food and the soil that we're consuming on a daily basis.
There's one last thing I want to ask you about, Sarah. One of the reasons I eat a plant-strong diet in the first place is out of the recognition of the cruelty that's inflicted on animals in today's factory farms and feedlots. I just do not want to support the terrible treatment of animals that has become standard operating procedure in industrial meat production today. I've always felt intuitively that eating the flesh of animals whose lives and deaths have been filled with suffering and terror can't be good for us. I don't know what signals are embedded in the meats by those experiences. Are there physiological or molecular mechanisms through which the fight or flight reactions in animals who are enduring these kinds of experiences could lead to heightened disease risk for the people who consume their flesh?
Absolutely. I mean, we don't even really need to get into what I think for you and I and many of our listeners is an obvious problem, which is the emotional impact that is, in a way, stored within the flesh of that animal. It could be terror, could be the death experience when it's a premature experience. But if we look just at the physiology, even just down to molecular level, we know now that adrenaline, which is one of the primary hormones that will be released during the slaughtering process, activates within cancer cells G-glycoprotein, which is basically what enables that cell to get rid of any type of chemotoxic agent and make it resistant. And this is often why chemo and radiation fails, is that that drug efflux pump basically keeps out all the stuff trying to kill it. So adrenaline is, and fight or flight has now been identified to be a primary factor in promotion of drug resistance to fighting cancer. So that would be an example where, yeah, I think we're vindicated now in advocating for a humane, which might exclude entirely animal products, but certainly when you look at the way that modern slaughtering occurs, it's a pretty terrible process, and we will then therefore have the downstream effects physiologically as well, which is promotion of death, I mean, in our own bodies.
Sayer, I appreciate your insights, your belief in us, and your knowledge, and your understandings of food and our deep relationship to it. It's been a pleasure to have this conversation with you. On behalf of Ocean and myself, and really of everyone involved in the Food Revolution Network, I want to thank you for being with us here today and for your ongoing, deeply felt dedication to a healthier future for all of us.
Thank you so much. It's been a great honor.
We've been talking with author, researcher, and GreenMed Info founder Sayer G. Sayer, your work is democratizing access to information, and it's taking health knowledge out of the ivory tower and making it available to the masses. Your website, GreenMed Info, is extraordinarily popular, and for very good reason. I think there's a deep hunger in these times for the work that you're doing and the service you're offering. We want to thank you for your deep research, your passion for truth, your penetrating insights, and for your partnership in the food revolution.
Thanks so much.
This concludes our interview, but our work is just getting started. If you feel excited by what you just heard and want to share it with other people in your life, if you want permanent access to 24 more amazing presentations and transcripts, then we have an offer to share. You can get a download and a transcript of the entire Food Revolution Summit, plus a huge collection of bonus resources from our speakers and partners. This empowerment package is available for a major discount between now and the end of the summit. For more information, please visit foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Again, that's foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Thank you so much for joining us in the Food Revolution.